You are about to enter the pop, pulp, and subcultural minds of several individuals. What may leak into the ether can sometimes be too strange, too confusing for the average human mind. When nerds assemble.
Hello, and welcome to episode 16 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Cookie.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
And we've got a nice bit of gentle things to talk about this week. Some of us have had very long weekends involving lots of music and staying out late. So, excuse me if I fall asleep during this episode. We've got some Star Wars Episode 7 news. We've got some Deus Ex film news. And in some confusion over Wii U profiles. Plus, we're going to be having a look at the latest GTA 5 trailer. Because, well, why not?
Because it's lovely.
It's lovely. It's adorable. And all the accompanying artwork is obviously suitably tasteful as well. It's all in the best possible taste. Okay, so obviously, you know, a few weeks back we were talking about how, you know, Disney bought Lucasfilm and obviously, you know, Star Wars Episode 7 announcement and all that, huh? And while we may still not have a director, as far as I can tell, they've decided to name on the official StarWars.com website the writer for the Episode 7 film. And it is, if I can pronounce it right, Michael Arndt, who wrote Little Miss Sunshine and Toy Story 3. Funnily enough, out of those two films, I actually prefer Little Miss Sunshine.
Right.
Yep, I prefer Little Miss Sunshine to Toy Story 3. You heard me right.
Toy Story 3 was a little depressing.
It was too depressing.
That's what it was all about. That was the whole point of it, wasn't it?
What, a depressing end to children's franchise?
I couldn't handle it. I couldn't.
Every great thing has to come to an end.
I haven't actually seen Toy Story 3.
You're lucky, I think.
No. Very lucky. It's a great piece of animation. It's a classic film. I loved it.
I've heard now, but good things about it. It's a bit sad, but...
It is a bit sad, but it's where the story goes.
No, I still prefer Little Miss Sunshine.
which I haven't seen either, even though I've had it recommended to me. I don't know.
Little Miss Sunshine was actually quite good as well.
Yeah.
Mm. Which is really... And to be fair, if he's going to be writing Star Wars 7, then, you know, kudos. We'll see what he comes up with.
I think the most important thing here is that it's not George Lucas.
Yeah. Yes.
Which is like, oh, thank God.
I'm assuming this guy, you know, Arndt, wouldn't put up with Lucas trying to trample over every draft or something if, you know, because this guy's won an Academy Award before.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, he'd kind of hope that he'd, you know, be like, no, George, stop it, George, if he tried to interfere too much during...
Jar Jar Binks is dying, George. Get used to it.
Yeah.
Well, wait,
yeah, first thing, first scene, he gets cut in half by the scrolling text.
Hey, you was watching a macaw.
He's a disemboweled.
Because obviously Seven's set after the, you know, original films, which are technically then in these three trilogies is the middle. You kind of hope that Jar Jar Binks would have, you know, passed away at some point, but we've never been told the longevity of the race that he comes from. So sadly, I suppose there is a small chance that the guy could still be alive.
God, no.
No.
No, 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 no.
Or somehow he was allowed to reproduce.
He was throttled by a Wookiee.
Yes.
Yes.
in my mind, yes.
That is the opening to episode.
I'd be quite happy if episode 7 has, you know, some more Wookiees kind of chilling. Maybe chilling. Shooting some stuff, maybe hitting chilling some stuff, and then shooting some more stuff, and then chilling.
Okay, this actually sounds like the Kevin Smith version.
Actually, I think he posted up something on his Facebook or something recently that was kind of a small, short summary of how he would do Star Wars Episode 7. I think I might have seen a peek of something. I'm not entirely sure what the details are exactly. But I can imagine that he's probably had a plan in his head for a very long time as to what the heck he would do for episode 7, you know. And
not let George Lucas write it.
There'd be that. I suspect, though, the film would probably end up definitely having at least a 12 rating in Smith's hands, because he probably wouldn't be able to help himself from including slightly adult things. I mean, what's the lowest certificate film? The lowest certificate film he's probably ever done? Probably a 15, mm-hmm. I think. Yeah, because like Jersey Girl was a 15, Zack and Miri was a 15, and Dogma was a 15.
Yeah.
Everything else is 18 rated. So, yeah, he would. It would be very unlikely that he could write for a PG audience. Very unlikely.
I know. I think you're selling him short there. I think he would have enough self-control.
Would he? Would he really? Have you seen what he's done with Batman lately? Have you seen? Have you heard?
Yeah, I know, but Batman isn't exactly renowned for being a, you know, children's, you know.
I wouldn't call Batman a sort of a PG.
Yeah.
But they did try to do that with the 90s films.
Let us not talk of those.
Let us not talk of those.
But I'll just say, with the whole George Lucas thing, and I'm saying, you know, so long as it's not George writing it. He's fine with the plot arcs. The original Star Wars, which, you know, as I pointed out last time we talked about this, I think he only really wrote A New Hope, Episode 4, and the others were either co-written or entirely written by other people, and, you know, he didn't direct them either. So, you know, they were better for it. He's fine at, you know, the big arcs and the ideas in the series, and it is his series, and he has, after all, written the outlines for 7, 8, 9.
Yes, he has.
So I'm perfectly happy with this arrangement where he's written those and someone else with such good kudos, you know, for films on his track record. He's doing them. So to me, it's a win-win. We're getting the films, and George Lucas isn't railroading, you know, his dialogue through it.
Oh, that's one of the things that's always got me about a lot of the Star Wars films is the dialogue.
I think I've actually read somewhere that Lucas actually has no particular interest in, you know, being like a director or anything. He actually wanted really to be an editor. So it's more of an editor's type film.
How ironic.
If you consider his obsession with special effects, that would kind of make sense if he likes the editing side of things far more.
And also the, you know, the transitions.
Those transitions.
Those just great.
Oh.
Those really do great. Like, you know, like the circle kind of zooming into the next shot type thing.
But the thing is, though, is that if they decide that they kind of want to keep the visual hallmarks of a Lucasfilm, that means those bloody things will be coming back again. Again.
Yeah.
Which I don't really mind.
No, I don't.
I get that they hark back to some of the older stuff that it's meant to be, again, harking back to.
Yeah.
But as a 21st century viewer, I find them very painful to watch.
It's like watching like a home movie done by like a distant cousin or something like that.
Which they happen to edit on an older version of Windows Movie Maker.
Yeah, and they're just like putting in like, you know, these transitions everywhere.
Yeah, it's like it's obsessive use of word art. it's not a good thing. It's not a good thing to keep switching the style for every single line.
Isn't it?
No.
Oh.
That's where I've been going wrong.
Okay.
We've got another bit of film news for you, or kind of. There could very well be a Deus Ex film in the works, which...
To be fair, considering, you know, there's like a Halo film in the works.
I think there's meant to be
Gears of War.
Gears of War.
Mass Effect. But basically, there's tons of these films, or rights to video games that have been brought up to make into films. And so far, very little has been actually achieved.
I can't remember.
Is anyone
working on a Mortal Kombat one at the moment as well?
Yeah, I think they are meant to be.
Sure. as even another game and or a film as well.
See, I hope that Robin Shao comes back as Liu Kang. I mean, I'm not entirely sure how old he is now. But he was a really good Liu Kang, I thought.
But on the Deus Ex front, apparently it's CBS Films who have announced that they're going to adapt the Human Revolution storyline for the big screen with Scott Derrickson, who is the director of Sinister and The Exorcism of Emily Rose, sort of in charge of the project. He'll be apparently working with Sinister's writer, who was C. Robert Cargill. I like cyberpunk. I like cyberpunk films. You know, I'm especially fond of things like Ghost in the Shell. But Human Revolution, it was quite layered. There was a lot of layers, which, I mean, considering the amount of time you usually have available to you to tell a story in a game, it's fine.
Yeah.
But a film, this is why I've been doubtful about things like the Mass Effect adaptations.
It would just turn into a trilogy, wouldn't it?
Mass Effect would. You know which game series I would love to see released on the big screen?
Manic Miner.
Do you know what? That would make a great film if it harked back to the sense of peril one finds in something like Dante's Peak. I'd be quite happy.
What I was actually thinking is Time Splitters.
Oh, Time Splitters, the film.
Ooh, that'd be cool.
Ooh.
You don't sound convinced, Retroid.
I want Time Splitters 4 instead, to be fair, for the actual Xbox PlayStation.
I'll say I'm not a huge fan of the Time Splitter games.
Really?
I'm just not.
I quite enjoy them.
I've tried with, you know, about two or three of them, but I couldn't get on with them.
Well, I mean, I think the further along the series you go, the better they are. So I think 3 is better than 2, and 2 is better than 1, in my opinion.
I tried 2 and 4.
There hasn't been a Time Splitters 4.
Hasn't there? I thought there was.
They were in development, but...
Oh, that was it. That's where I'm getting 4 from. So, yeah, it will have been 2 and 3 I tried, and I just could not. It's like...
I loved them. I always got accused.
Oh, I know they're well-liked. I'll say it's probably me. It's not you, Time Splitters. I'm sorry.
any more thoughts on the idea of this Ex Human Revolution being made as a film, though? Because
it's got potential, but it depends on which areas they focus on.
It's got potential, but if it was done, if it was the 1980s, and if it was going to get the sort of Blade Runner dense treatment,
that would be cool.
That would be the most amazing thing ever. But
I mean, I've got. One thing that I really liked about the game, because I have played the original games, and one thing I liked about Human Revolution were the quite detailed environments and just kind of like the oppressive nature of the urban settings that you're in.
Yeah.
And the fact that obviously the game isn't all action, except for the boss fights, unless you want it to be.
Yeah.
But then the problem with somebody like Hollywood company taking a film of this is, you know, are they going to go for the stealth, or are they going to go all actiony? I mean, a mix of both obviously would be, you know, appropriate. But at the same time, if they just go heavy on the action rather than just having him kind of sneak about all the time.
I think an interesting question would be, if you do the Deus Ex Human Revolution on big screen, would it be better to follow the story of the game, or would it be better to create a new story in parallel with the game? Maybe like duck in and out of the narrative of the actual game itself.
That would work.
I can just see them horribly simplifying it, and it pretty much being, I won't say any spoilers for anyone who hasn't finished the game. And if anyone who hasn't finished the game is listening, good God, just go out and play the game. It's great. Button the button side. But I can see how it would just be, blah blah blah, Sinister Corporation, blah blah blah, someone wants to change how things are, and just, you know, an obvious bad guy, and a lot of the politics of the world, it's just going to get lost. Yeah. I can't see it translating.
Yeah, I think the angrier you get, Retroid, the lower your bitrate becomes. I think I'm.
Oh, is that breaking up there?
Yeah.
Almost.
Don't make him angry.
Well, I probably won't be making any sense whatsoever when we get to the Wii U news.
Okay. some final thoughts though on the Deus Ex for me. So as somebody who really liked games, I like the idea of having a film, but we've got a lot of game franchises at the moment that are, you know, up in the air in some form of development-ish hell. And, you know, I think that until we actually see something that resembles maybe a teaser trailer, I'm like, I believe it when I see it.
And also, this is another one where it would be just be much, much better if one of the cable channels got hold of it.
Yeah.
And they did a 10-hour series.
Yes. Yeah.
I think, you know, a lot of people seem to, especially like in Hollywood, they buy something up and try and stick it in a movie, and sometimes I think it is actually better working as a TV series.
I think it is a bit stupid doing it with games, because if you say the fact that a lot of games you're looking at between, at a minimum, low-end 6 hours gameplay, and the higher end is usually 15-20 plus hours worth of gameplay, which Deus Ex is
pretty easy to do. But there again, gameplay doesn't necessarily
if that's even if you manage to not die all the time, if you just keep going and not deviating too much into side missions, you're still looking at that much. And there's a lot of narrative during that time.
Yeah, there is.
A TV series, especially for a game like Deus Ex, would actually make more sense. So
I'm a bit sick of them trying to just force the template of a film on things which is, it's just not suitable. Can you imagine if Game of Thrones had been a series of films instead?
It would not work.
It wouldn't work. They might have ended up being good films, but
it wouldn't have had the power.
Just would not be the same.
No, it wouldn't have the power.
Yeah.
But anyway, moving on from Deus Ex movie speculation, for which some of us dread, maybe are slightly interested in, but again, won't believe it until we see it. So there's a bit, I say confusion, but there's not some fab news coming out about Wii U profiles. I mean, considering that, well, from when we're recording this, the Wii U was launched, was it yesterday, today? I'm not sure. I'm a bit confused by the time zone differences, but it's out in the US.
It's out in America land.
Yeah, it's out in America land. It's out across the pond.
And we have to wait till Friday.
Is it this Friday? Or
no, it's meant to be the 30th, so it's a week Friday.
I thought it was this Friday.
No?
So it's in the week on Friday then?
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Well.
Why?
I think other people have lamented over this already elsewhere on the interwebs. There's probably no sense. Actually, to be honest, I would say releasing it on a Friday at the end of the month makes far more sense, as I've previously said, because for a lot of people around then, so kind of guaranteed more so that people actually buy it.
Yeah, it is payday, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'll be tempted. No. Evil Nintendo.
That's if you can actually find any, though, because, I mean, don't forget, as we've already discussed, there's potential for shortages, because that's how Nintendo like to roll. Though admittedly, they did have a problem with one of their factories. But anyway, Wii U profiles. Now, what did you spot, Monsieur Retroid, previously?
C'est moi?
What did you see about Wii U profiles that you were trying to tell me about on Twitter the other day?
Right. That pretty much, if you create a profile, it's stuck on that Wii U. You cannot move it.
Hey?
Yep.
Yeah,
you get a Wii U in the house. If you create your profile on there, it's going to be on that console.
So what happens if your console breaks and they have to replace it?
Lols, is what happens.
Really?
You know that little animated GIF of them holding up a DS and a Wii, and it prints money. This is one of the reasons why it prints money.
Are you kidding me, aren't you? God, say you're kidding me, man.
So, it's not as if, everyone else does this. I mean, it's not as if, let's say the 360 doesn't, the PS3 doesn't, iOS, if you buy a new device, you can, it's not as if you can transfer your profile.
Android,
Steam. Yeah.
Even the PlayStation Vita.
Yeah, pretty much everyone that's in the gaming sphere.
Oh, my word.
Allows you to have, your profile is your profile. You sign into it, by putting the details into whatever machine you're using. Not Nintendo.
I do wonder.
That's just crazy, man.
I do wonder if it's because they don't necessarily have the hardware infrastructure available to them to run a service like what Microsoft have got with the Xbox accounts and Sony have got with PSN accounts. I do wonder if it's the underlying infrastructure that they haven't quite got or can't afford to invest in at the moment in order to actually make that jump.
The Wii U hasn't really interested me that much. I'll be interested when I see more Bayonetta 2, I think, and it's come down in price.
It's probably going to get cut in price within a year. That's my feeling.
I'm sure one of the things was the fact that you could have... There was a service like Xbox Live where you could meet and greet your friends and have friends online, and it was supposed to be more online enabled and everything else, wasn't it? Or am I just being thick?
No, that is there. Was it Nintendo Land or?
That's the one. And Nintendo Land. That was there.
Well, that's like the game. I think it's like the Mii.
Yeah, it's more of a game thing rather than the online service, isn't it?
So what they're going to be relying on is the publishers to have their own, like Call of Duty will have its, Activision will have their own servers to host their online games and stuff, won't they?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
To me, the whole thing with, the profiles, a lot of people don't realise that the way Nintendo do the DRM, it's locked to whichever console you buy it on. If you're doing that on DSi, it's locked to your DSi. If you buy something on the 3DS, it's locked to your 3DS. If you buy something on the Wii, it's locked to your Wii. The only way you can transfer things over is if your machine develops a fault and you get a replacement machine from the repair company, which officially repairs Nintendo hardware. They can transfer things across from one machine to another, but I don't think there's any way you can do that without yourself, without wandering into dodgy territory.
So what you're saying is, because one of the great things about, I've always held great respect for Nintendo for doing, is all their consoles were backwards compatible, so you can play the previous versions games on stuff, you can play DS games on the 3DS, play Wii games on the Wii U and everything. So what you're saying, though, is it's all right to go backwards, but if you go forwards, you're kind of screwed.
Yes.
Yeah.
Whoa.
You can probably buy those same games on the Wii U, but you would have to buy them again on the Wii U. The DRM is to the console.
I'm not sure if I saw something that said that maybe we're releasing a transfer cable for the Wii to the Wii U.
Yeah,
as an individual who's launched Nintendo Wii decided to destroy itself recently, much to my annoyance. And this was after Paul had recently bought over the Wii Store. What was it you bought?
Oh, yes. Because I was playing through Super Mario RPG. I was near the end of that, but I also brought
Chrono Trigger
and Super Mario Paper Mario for the N64.
All very good games.
I didn't actually get to play either Chrono Trigger or Paper Mario. So it's like I've basically paid out for that. And yeah, if I can't actually get them switched or if I can't get the console fixed, then, I've lost that.
No way.
It baffles me in this day and age when, if I want to play a game of Worms or, something like that on a friend's 360, I can just put my profile and the game on a memory stick, take it round to my friends, and so long as they're on the net, log in on my profile on it, it works.
You don't even have
we
to
can
do
play
that,
the game around there, and
you've got the. Sorry? You don't even have to do that now. They've got the cloud service launched.
But that wouldn't necessarily do
game transfers and whatnot. So, say for example, if you've got a certain amount of way through a game and take it to another console, you'll still need the memory stick.
Because the whole point of the cloud service is that it provided a cloud save service for your Xbox 360 games.
Okay. I've done that because we've got an Xbox upstairs and downstairs, so I've got my game save of Skyrim on the cloud. So if I'm going downstairs to play, I can just go straight into it, or upstairs straight into it.
Yeah, I do apologise.
I'm not so worried about the whole. I mean, save game progress or save things in the cloud. I'm not so worried about it. It's making sure I don't have to keep buying money. Well, sorry, spending money every time damn console breaks and I need to rebuy games.
Yeah, that's understandable.
I reset my Android phone. I've had, obviously several paid apps. Oh, good. I didn't have to rebuy them. That was nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just you logged into your profile and it was, these are the things you own.
Yeah.
And tap on them, download them again. There you go.
Exactly.
To be fair, I think because Amazon has a similar thing where, if you download MP3s using their service, you can't actually re-download them.
No, I think you do. You sure?
I'm pretty sure you're kind of pretty much a case of if you don't back them up, then you lose them if your computer goes down.
Oh, yeah.
But then music can be a particular problem.
Yeah.
Because of the music industry putting on specific user restrictions.
Credentials and stuff, don't they?
Yeah.
I mean,
of course, Nintendo and Microsoft and Sony, they're all they're all publishers, and they have relationships with publishers who can set their own.
Well, I mean, as far as I'm aware, Nintendo are still working on their online system. So as far as I'm aware, so things might possibly be changed.
But,
I'm not 100% sure.
But the thing is, though, is that hopefully. So. Microsoft were the first ones to really introduce a online service fully, properly, with their own service and stuff above when they launched Xbox Live originally for the original Xbox. And obviously Sony, I'm not sure if Sony really involved their own service at all for the limited online capability that you got with the PS2. There was the slight, and obviously with, Phantasy Star Online was about one of the only games you could play online on the GameCube. So Microsoft is the most mature in handling online services, followed by Sony, and then Nintendo have barely
service.
Which means that they don't have, to me, because it costs a lot of money to have the physical infrastructure to run online services for millions of subscribers. Considering their financials that they have had for the last year or so, I can't imagine that they've had the ability to invest in the infrastructure needed to run an online service. And I doubt they could even it wouldn't be secure enough in some ways for them to even use it, a cloud provider either for these services, I'm not saying they'd necessarily use Amazon Cloud, but that kind of thing.
I just think even if they weren't willing to do that,
you could always save.
They could have got someone else to.
Save the profiles to a memory card, which is then transferable to the Wii and the Wii U, because I believe they take the same memory card, don't they?
Well, I mean, if you think about it, the original Nintendo Wii, you get basically, if you remember, the Wiimote itself actually has a small onboard memory, which you can actually use to take profiles from one console to another. Mm.
Yes.
But at the same time,
so they were forward thinking in that regard. So
But it's just that online element. Like I said, I just don't think they've got infrastructure. A server can last a long time. I just don't think they've ever really invested in that side of things. Because if they had, they would have had the services already.
It seems to be a particular problem with Japanese gaming companies, and I don't quite get why. Because the first company to do it, the first console company to do it properly would have been, they didn't have an eStore, and I'm looking at it from a profiles that you log into and can buy content with.
And it's the console manufacturer who's hosting that side of things. I mean, yes, they've done stuff where they've enabled a degree of online capability so that a game by a different publisher is able to connect to that publisher's servers in order to enable gameplay. It's when it's the console manufacturer's side of things. Yeah.
I mean, did anyone have a PS3 around launch?
No, but I did hear some really bad horror stories.
The operating system, the way it handled online, all of that was horrible in comparison with. I'm not saying that the launch 360 marketplace was fantastic. It had problems, but it was a hell of a lot easier to use and find, download by, it was a hell of a lot better thought out than the PlayStation Network was. And where the PlayStation Network is now is quite a big distance away from what it was when it launched. So Sony have had to really pull the socks up.
Yeah.
And they've done well with that. So when it comes to Nintendo and they're saying, we've got online as a priority and there's online gaming and we're going to have a proper online store and you'll be able to do all this and that with it. And then, of course, when it finally lands on the doormat, it's just, my God, what are you doing? It's like the 360 and the PS3 completely ignoring anyone else who's doing this. As we said, iOS and Android. It's like they've just utterly, completely ignored the Sony experience and how they've had to claw their way up from where they launched.
Yeah.
It's just, oh God, why are you doing it like that?
Yeah.
It seems rather backwards considering what other companies are doing and considering what the competition is doing.
Exactly. They're not paying any attention to what anyone else has done. And I think a lot of people are going to get really surprised because, especially with so many people having smartphones, they're used to the fact that if you buy a new one or if your old one breaks, you can go and re-download what your purchase is.
Of course, I think part of the problem is that Nintendo has always been very shtum on it's like features and stuff like that. So, obviously we're looking at this from like completely an outside point of view. So there may be, people at Nintendo that are getting these reports, coming back saying that people are unhappy with their online service and they might be tinkering around in the background and just haven't released anything yet.
I think the profile thing is a bit of a problem though, because they had, oh, at least for the American version of the console, they released an update on launch and there were rumors throwing around that that has bricked some consoles.
Yeah.
So if you happen to, prior to that update, somehow manage to get anything onto the console in terms of profile, any saves and whatnot,
I can see this being far more expensive for Nintendo in the long run.
Yeah.
If they're if their firmware updates can, well, any firmware update on any hardware can have issues like that because there's always something which can go wrong when you're doing things remotely.
Yeah, exactly. It's ridiculous.
Hopefully Nintendo will fix it.
Yeah, they will fix it. They'll have to, won't they?
Yeah.
It's just
they won't be allowed not to fix it, because if they just try and ignore the problem, then they're on a losing streak there straight away, aren't they?
Yeah, but then they've not fixed it with the Wii and the DSi and the 3DS. So we'll just see if they have to.
Oh yeah, this is true.
But I have talked to people who have said that it's the whole profile and the everything being locked to the console, not the profile, is putting them off.
Yeah, well, I can understand where they're coming from on that. To be fair,
yeah,
totally.
Okay, moving on. I want to remind you, lovely people, that we've still got a competition on at the moment for you to win digital copies of Telecost Protocol Issue 1. If you listened to episode 15, last week's episode, we had a special guest, Mr. Peter Cooper, the writer for Telecost Protocol Comics. And basically, we've got a tweet going around. We'll be linking to it for the post for this episode. And basically, the tweet is, want to win Issue 1 of Telecost Protocol? Follow at Telecost Protocol at Nerds Podcast and retweet this message to be in with a chance. And the competition ends 26th of November, 12 p.m. GMT. So, like I said, we'll be linking to that. You'll see it on our Twitter feed. And some of us might be retweeting it occasionally. So that's open till Monday next week. And it's open to anyone, regardless of where you live, as long as you've obviously got a computer that has an internet connection. It's just, you know, a Twitter.
It helps with competitions, Twitter, and podcasts.
Yeah, it really does. But the main thing we wanted to talk to you about this week is, well, finally, after a slight longish, kind of longish drought, we got a second trailer for Grand Theft Auto 5 last week. And basically, I just wanted to discuss how people are feeling about the approach of the latest game in the series. Oh, series, franchise. And, you know, whether or not they've got any good expectations. Are we looking forward to it? Do we really care?
Gimme.
Go on.
Gimme, gimme, gimme.
Go. You want that retro D.
Oh, yes. I played most of the previous GTA games, but it wasn't until GTA 4 that the whole series really gelled for me. Up until GTA 4, any of the previous games, it seemed to be a sandbox with missions tacked onto it. But yeah, GTA 4, just to me, it was, I know some people disagree, but to me, it was a fantastic game in a very believable world. And I want more. So I'm very happy by this. You know, this coming up.
Apparently you'll have more, what with suggestions that it's the size of Red Dead Redemption and Grand Theft Auto 4 combined.
I'm rubbing my legs with anticipation.
Paul, what do you think? I mean,
well, from the trailer, obviously the graphics look really good. You know, it's kind of bound to be anyway. That's pretty much like given nowadays. Mm. But because I mean, there's obviously the three characters. I mean, are those meant to be like interchangeable, or like you can play as one and then switch to another? I'm not entirely sure.
I think you're playing as the father figure. That's what we got from the first trailer.
Okay.
It's just that obviously the other characters, you know, like Roman and that in 4.
Hopefully the game's dialogue will be as snappy as the trailers.
It will be. Who here has played the episodes for GTA 4?
I've played a tiny, tiny bit of, I think it was Ballad of Gay Tony.
Mm. Well, it was rather fortunate. I say it was fortunate. I broke my foot just about the time that the double pack of the episodes came out.
Mm.
So I was rather stuck, stationary. And what happens with those is that they have their own stories set within Liberty City. But at certain points, certain missions will intersect with missions that happened. You'll get a different perspective. Like in GTA 4, in the main game, you'll have to talk to some drug dealers and you're double-crossed. Whereas if you play Lost and Damned, what will happen is that one of your missions is you're working for those drug dealers and you have to go and snipe from the roof.
Ah.
So every now and again in the storylines, they'll just collide slightly. And you'll get a different, you know, side of something that's happening.
Mm.
And it just, you know, builds. So I'm thinking, with them having three characters in this, I wonder if they're looking at it as a, you know, this is the main game and you have the two episodes.
Makes sense.
Mm. Yeah, so like things will just intersect. Yeah.
Bit like the Resident Evil technique. It's like, since Resident Evil 2, you know, you kind of play the game through as one character, then the other character, kind of its narrative interweaves.
Yeah, I've not played much of the Resi
games, fair enough,
to be honest. But so yeah, I know you lot have.
I've never really played any of the GTA games in depth. I've got vague-ish memories of some of my cousins playing one of the earlier ones on PC, like the ones that were set, well, ones that were set in London. The top-down view and everything. Vague childhood memories of that, and...
You're making me feel old.
I'm sorry. Which was it, San Andreas and Vice City? When Vice City and then San Andreas released, when those released, it was something that didn't appeal to me because all the boys were playing it. And it was a slight gentrification thing for me. Like, even though I play a lot of games that tend to be marketed towards guys, the way guys went on about the games actually put me off ever really approaching them. And I finally played a bit of earlier this year, about over 20 hours. And I found that interesting, mostly because obviously they switched the focus to narrative quite a bit character, which was good. But at the same time, the sandbox nature of play with it, it was... Because, I mean, for me, sandbox games previously had been, you know, like Elder Scrolls and a bit of Fallout. And this was, in some ways, less structured than that. So, which is weird. I just found the sandbox-like nature of Fallout a bit too much to deal with. But again, yeah, I know it's weird because I'm fine with like something like Skyrim or Morrowind. But
I think the problem with sandbox games... is that, you can have wide open areas where you can go off and do things at your own pace and whatnot, but always make sure that there's at least one strand, if not more, that you can follow at any point in the game, so that you never go and like do one mission and then you have to wait around or waste time to, you know, get to the next mission.
I mean, I suppose this thing, it just wasn't in my nature to steal cars all the time and go around killing people and bludgeoning them with objects.
That totally sounds like you.
Apparently not. I was finding it really hard to act bad in Grand Theft Auto 4. And when there were bits in that main story where you felt that you should have had a choice because was it Nikolai? Nico. What Nico was doing was just kind of like, could he really do that? I know he's, got that whole background of like the war and stuff, but I can't how violence would always be the answer.
Perhaps they should have had the Paragon Renegade kind
of thing. Yeah, I think they could have done with that a bit, actually. Not necessarily that it was building up to like a final like levels of goodness and niceness, but at least giving you the chance to deal with things in perhaps more logical manners than kind of what happens. Because sometimes with the stuff that Nico did, it was just kind of like, why are you doing this? Your past maybe slightly explains this, but really this is the dumbest thing your character could be doing right now. And you've actually seemed pretty intelligent up to this point. So the heck are you doing this?
That's the thing. They might be sandbox, GTA and Elder Scrolls and things like that. But the GTA games have always had a far more scripted narrative. There's a definite story and there's not much freedom within that. The worlds themselves are sandbox, but
I think they could benefit from perhaps allowing the story to branch out a bit more. Like you're giving you the option to slightly different responses. I mean, I'm not saying that it has to be super nice and super bad, but there could be stuff that could have consequences. And actually, that would lead to more replay for the game, so that isn't just going around and shooting people and driving cars. You might replay it so that you can actually see how the different responses lead to a slightly different game.
It would be interesting, but I think other people, other developers have tried things like that, like Infamous. And possibly Prototype. I've not played enough.
No, there's not much in the way of consequence.
Yeah, well, Infamous, but even in Infamous, it basically boils down to what colour electricity do you want?
Can I just say that one thing that I actually find worked with Driver, San Francisco, is the cutting up into chapters. I think that actually worked quite well. So, like, when you've got, like, a big sandbox game where you can go around and do anything, you know, actually cutting it up into chapters, and also making sure that it's easy to find new missions.
You kind of got that with GTA 4 a bit, because there was the progressions through the different islands, which kind of signified that you'd started a new chapter of Nico's life.
It would open up, and you'd end up working for different bosses.
Yeah. Bosses, yeah.
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 I mean, that was another thing, like, actually, when you got down to, if you weren't deciding to just kick back and just go around and raise hell, actually, the gameplay for 4, if you were following the story, did get kind of repetitive. Like, actually, when there was a bit of narrative going on, that was a godsend, because it broke things up.
Pacing.
Yeah, otherwise it would just be earn so much money before you can, you know, go and give this money to someone.
Yeah, I think pacing issues have always got to be addressed with sandbox games.
Yeah,
definitely.
But then going back to the trailer for 5, I'm liking the look of things. I'm liking the fact that we've got a guy that's obviously tried to do good, but he's kind of on a slippery slope. Yeah, that kind of thing. The whole thing with his son, that I'm finding interesting.
It does look quite interesting. I mean, I haven't been following much of GTA 5. I've got a love-hate relationship with it, to be fair, with the Grand Theft Auto franchise. I loved Vice City. Quite enjoyed Grand Theft Auto 3. San Andreas, I wasn't too much keen on. Grand Theft Auto 4, I liked how the narrative was a lot stronger. I liked the story, but I just wish there was a bit more fun like there was in Vice City. It was a guilty pleasure of mine to come home from work and just put Vice City on and just ride around and killing people and mowing people down. And
if you kind of liked GTA 4, you know, please, it's available cheap now.
Yeah.
Go and get the standalone, remember, episodes.
Yes.
Can I also say that when you have, like, mini games in, like, say, for example, going bowling and whatnot, it's not actually that fun.
Yeah, the whole dating thing and going out for lads' nights in 4 was a bit...
See, in Vice City, I loved the remote control aeroplanes. Was it in Vice City? Where you could park up and you had this challenge to get the remote control aeroplanes on the hoops and stuff. Again, I did get sidetracked, and it was a case of let's see how many coppers we could cut down with the remote control aeroplane. But it was great fun. I thought the mini games in that were quite good.
There are more mini games like that in The Ballad of Gay Tony.
Is there?
Yeah.
See,
trust me, if you go and get the episodes as a standalone disc, I've seen it around for a tenner, you will not regret it.
Cool.
If you kind of liked GTA 4, but you wanted something that was more like, you know, some of the, you know, the older ones with the, you know, mini games and things like that, you will really like the episodes.
I might do that. Because, I mean, Vice City 5, looking at the trailer, watching the trailer over the weekend, it does look great and it does look very promising. I like the way, like you say, the narrative. It does look like some bits of it have got that sort of zany fun from Vice City thrown in there as well, which is quite amusing.
Up until playing Red Dead Redemption and GTA 4, I didn't get excited about, you know, the GTA games.
See, this is another thing, though. I loved Red Dead Redemption, and I was so hoping they were going to announce this sequel to that instead of Grand Theft Auto 5, because that, to me, was just an epic game.
I loved it.
It was just amazing. I loved it. It was just being able to roam the Wild Wild West on your horse was just, I don't know, I just found it so relaxing at times as well. And the musical score, yes.
Yeah.
Was it like the equivalent of Wind Waker?
You know, that was just, for me, it just totally blew my mind. Where I wasn't sure what to expect with it, and I was really pleased with what I got.
It was thankfully entirely different to the previous Red Dead.
Yes. It was just, I don't know. I love that game.
Yeah, seeing what Rockstar have done with their last few games, I am really looking forward to it.
If it's got the same quality of narrative as Red Dead Redemption, keeps you hooked like Red Dead Redemption, and it brings in some of the fun of Vice City, I will be a happy, happy man.
It looks like it's going to be a bit more, you know, towards the Vice City skill, and you know, it's not going to be po-faced, is it, with it being GTA? But yeah, it looks more Vice City than Four did.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose if people are after games with ultra violence and crazy shenanigans, and they're better off playing Saints Row.
Never
at the moment, technically speaking, because that's kind of gone down that route.
I've got Saints Row 3 for Steam, but I haven't actually got a chance to play it yet.
It is supposed to be ridiculous. Well, it's supposed to be quite over the top, isn't it?
Yeah, the Saints Row games have taken the whole, you know, slightly mad sandbox and just, you know, going completely over the top, and they've ran with it. And I'm happy with that, because that's the kind of thing that I didn't quite get on with in the previous GTA. So I'm happy that there's, you know, one game series catering for, you know, one set of, you know, fans. Yeah. And you've still got the, you know, the more narrative GTAs. So yeah, I'm happy with that.
I like this old fashioned diesel trains as well. They look pretty mint in that trailer. Sad little fact there.
Never mind.
I mean, I think, because I keep thinking about whether or not I want to go back to GTA 4 and maybe at least try and finish the main story, basically.
Yes, you do.
I do. Because I keep thinking about it, because the GTA 5 talk is, like, online and stuff is making me think, oh, maybe I should just get back to it. But another thing is making me realise is that, because sadly I haven't actually played Red Dead Redemption, and I've heard people rave about it for several years now.
Oh, Red Dead is awesome.
You know, I'm drawing up a Christmas list at the moment, so maybe I'll just have to ask for it. But it's got a vibe for my attention with the likes of Dishonored and maybe some Wii U games.
No, it doesn't. I've got it here somewhere.
But then I would think I would like to be able to play the what was the deal with the zombie mode?
That was
zombie
level.
Oh, in Red Dead.
Yeah, that's
separate.
It's a single player campaign.
Okay.
And it's nicely done as well. It doesn't affect, you know, it is separate.
Yeah.
It uses a lot of the same characters, but it's done in a way which is it's like an alternate, like a, I can't remember if it's literally a dream. But yeah, it's very good.
I mean, I suppose the thing to take away from all this in regards to GTA 5 is that Rockstar have had a chance to grow a lot since GTA 4 and refine things further, one would hope. So actually, you know, I think the one thing that might be slightly worrying about this is the size of the sandbox at the moment. Because it's sounding pretty big.
Gargantuan.
Yes. Mm-hmm. There seems to be a movement in in games to kind of make things bigger. You know, more space between, you know, kind of the ends of the world type thing.
Yeah.
So no, it must be the biggest sandbox ever.
I mean, it was bad enough walking from end to end in Morrowind. If you were crazy enough to do that.
Yeah.
I think the biggest risk with that kind of field of game design is obviously how many players are actually going to play through the story till the very end. Because obviously, you know, stuff happens in life. You know, you get kind of knocked off it. And if it's a long, gargantuan titan of a game, then you may feel that, you know, getting back to it again might be a bit of a, you know.
Which is actually true. Because that's one of the things that's put me off going back to GTA 4, because I actually did put quite a bit of time into it a few months ago. So it's just kind of, I don't really want to start things again.
I presume a similar thing with Lost Odyssey as well.
Yeah, actually.
Because, you know, that's like game on, what, four or five discs?
I think four?
Yeah.
It's definitely four.
So, yeah, that's one of the reasons. I love the game, but I haven't completed it.
Same here. I got to the fourth disc of Lost Odyssey, and and now you just got to wander about and level up. And
yes, so this is traditional style Japanese RPGs for you.
Yeah, there are some traditions that are made to be broken.
Yeah. I think on that note, I think I'm going to call it a night for us. Oh, just one more thing. We did actually have a post on our Facebook page about GTA. I'll just read it up. Chris said, if they truly do something new, then yes, in regards to GTA 5. At the time, I said to friends that GTA 4 was the most disappointing game of the year, as they'd not really done anything new. It was the same old mission structure with the same old problems. And as we've just said, you know, I'm hoping that Rockstar have learned things. And that they'll be able to improve on their previous formulas.
Yeah, they have.
I think that, to be honest, I think that's a fair problem with most sandbox games. Because, I mean, if you think about it, you know, yes, you have, like, X amount of missions, and it can be absolutely amazing amount of missions, but the variety of those missions, obviously, you know, if you're kind of doing the same thing, like going and getting an item, or going and defending a place, or going and doing this, going and doing that, you know, that type of thing, it is going to get, you know, quite old, quite fast.
Yeah.
I can understand some of the, you know, the problems that people had with 4, but I just disagree.
Fair enough.
All right. So that is definitely it for tonight. Again, we implore you to enter our Twitter competition. We'll have details for it for the post for this episode. And so that's it. And it's good night from...
It's good night from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid at Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
And it's good night from me, Paul, aka OneArmed_Cookie on Twitter. And you can also find me lurking around thegamejar.com.
Okay, it's good night from me, Paul Blewett. I have a website, paul-blewett.com, and you can find me on Twitter as Paul Blewett.
And it's good night from me. I'm Emily. You can find me on Twitter at EK6891. You can also find my website via ek-creations.com. You can also find everything to do with this episode and more at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. And we're also over on Games Fiends, which is www.gamesfiends.com. You can find us via our Twitter at nerdpodcast. We're also on Facebook as Nerd Assemble Podcast. And you can also say hi to us over on Google Plus. And again, that's Nerd Assemble Podcast.
Well, we get around.
Yeah, we do. It's a good night from me.
Good night from
me. Good night.
Good night.
Night.